Hello, everybody, and welcome to Friends of the Force, a Star Wars podcast. I'm your host, Brad.
And I'm your host, Sarah.
And welcome to the Kenobi Keynote, where we're talking all things Obi-Wan Kenobi. And on today's episode, we are talking about part three. Oh my gosh, Ooh. It's already halfway over. Can you believe it?
How did we get here so fast? And how do we just like not have enough time to talk about every frame of this show that we are both so excited about? What the heck?
Well, I mean, we got two episodes on Friday and then, you know, four to five day wait for episode three. And now here we are.
Now we have to wait 7 days.
It's brutal.
I feel like I've been played.
Yeah, me too. This will be a full spoiler discussion. So again, if you haven't watched part three of Kenobi, first off, what are you doing? Go do that right now. It's awesome. It's a great episode. But also, we don't want to spoil any of the fun surprises for you throughout this episode. So spoilers ahead.
Yeah.
All right. This episode was intense. It was very intense. Mm-hmm. I don't know how you felt, but it was just a wild range of emotions because we start with like the setup of like what is inevitably going to be a confrontation between Obi-Wan and Darth Vader. We get some amazing interactions throughout between Ben and Leia, which just continues to be the heart of the show. I think their dialogue specifically is really putting on full display how strong the writing is on the show. It's not expositional. It's not unnecessary. Some of the best Star Wars writing that we've gotten in quite some time, especially in TV. And it feels genuine. It feels like these are characters that we've known and loved forever. It feels very in character, especially for like little Leia, you know, taking charge throughout the episode. And I love that. And then by the end, getting the final confrontation between Obi-Wan and Vader, which I'm sure is not their last, but it is the first. And the way that Ewan McGregor acts in this episode is so powerful. The way his trauma comes across on his face and the fear, you know, we kept hearing about how Ewan was so scared when he saw Darth Vader on set. And now I understand what he meant by that, because this episode turns quickly into a horror episode of Star Wars that we have not quite seen ever. It kind of makes the hallway scene in Rogue One look like chump meat in a way.
Yeah, it makes it look like child's play. It's it's kind of bonkers. You mentioned the writing and how strong it is, and I really want to highlight that because it really feels like they sat down, the writers on the show, even over the iterations, like however they pulled the old story beats into the new story, whatever, right? It feels like they sat down and said to themselves, okay, so we have 6 episodes that are going to be around an hour long. How can we maximize every single second in order to have this show like come together as one? And I really feel like throughout these episodes, they have been setting down, they have been laying the groundwork for like the ultimate confrontation, for the ultimately where the story is going, for where Obi-Wan needs to be at the end of the show in order for him to be the person that he is in A New Hope. It is really amazing to watch the sort of cohesion that we're getting from episode to episode. And perhaps that sounds silly to say, because like, yeah, you would expect that, but I don't think that we've always gotten that. So it's like, it's really tight, well-written, connected, meaty sort of writing that is really fun to kind of dive into throughout the series, for sure.
Yeah, it's a much different style of storytelling than The Mandalorian, because The Mandalorian's more like sort of adventure of the week, Buck Rogers, serialized storytelling. And this is really like, again, they've described it as a 6-part movie, right? So you really do see that, how it, you have those cliffhanger endings. Like we had Leia getting kidnapped, Vader in the Bacta tank, and now Leia about to get kidnapped by Reva, which is like, how do they escape the situation? This is just crazy to think about. Obi-Wan is gravely injured and Leia's about to get taken by an Inquisitor, and Vader's here with a battalion of stormtroopers as well as 2 other Inquisitors. How do they get out of the situation? And I think the strength of the show is to make me legitimately concerned about the fates of Obi-Wan and Leia, even though I know they both live. I know they're going to be fine. But the fact that I am actually worried about them, that's a testament to the strength of the show. Is because you can have Star Wars where you're like, oh, I know how this ends, and not feel that investment. And for me to feel the investment and to be like, what's going to happen next? Is Obi-Wan going to die? Is Leia going to get shot? You know, that's good storytelling.
Right. Because, yeah, we both know how both of their stories end. We know that we have to make it out reasonably okay, you know? So it really is a testament to the storytelling and the writing power here that they are making us genuinely afraid. And how do they do that? They make the villains scarier. They make the villains more tangible and real. And, you know, they make the stakes seem high. Even though ultimately we know they both survive and are okay for, you know, a little while longer at least. It's pretty awesome. Can we start here with this opening scene? We get Obi-Wan meditating, and then we get like this absolutely pitch perfect frame it sort of conversation between Obi-Wan and Leia.
Yeah, absolutely.
So like she's like, are we there yet or something? And he's trying to fix, I think, Lola. And she's like, well, can't you just use the force on it? Or it's because they're on a trade route. Can't you just use the force on it or something? And he's like, that's not how it works. And she's like, well, how does it work?
Is that the new, I have a bad feeling about this, you think? You know, we've heard Finn say that, obviously.
Like, or, that's not how it works.
Solo. Yeah.
Yeah. 100%. 100%. Yeah. That was so fun to listen to. But then he says, like, how does the force work? And he says, have you ever been afraid of the dark? How does it feel when you turn on the light? She says, I feel safe. And he goes, yeah, it feels like that. And I was just like, oh, be still my heart. Like, you know, if you've listened to us for any period of time, you know, I love it when we talk about what the force is and what the force is to different people and what the force feels like to different people. For Avar Chris, it is a song. For Elzar Mann, it is an ocean. For Leia, it is her intuition into other people's emotions. And for Obi-Wan, it's like not being afraid of the dark and feeling safe in the light. And I thought that was so perfect and poetic and also just so tangible, right? I think we can often talk about the force. We were saying, you know, yesterday when we were watching this episode, oh, you know, it surrounds us and binds us as an energy field, midichlorians, this, that, or the other, right?
More, like more technical and scientifical explanation of the force, yeah.
Right, and this is so not that. This is so tangible. All of us knows what it has felt like to be afraid of the dark or think there's a monster under our bed or, you know, think that, you know, we aren't safe in the place where we are. And then we make one change, one simple change, turning on the light, and immediately like that, we are safe. And I think that the scene is so powerful because it tells Leia something in a kind of realm she can understand, but it also allows Obi-Wan to think about the force again. And also you think about the fact that he's really not been using the force with the exception of like with the attempt to talk to Qui-Gon. He's been kind of hiding away. He's been in the dark. He's been afraid of the dark.
And quite literally in this episode, it's beautiful because we have this conversation up front and at the end of the episode, nighttime strikes. He is being hunted by Darth Vader. He is submerged in darkness. He is afraid of not only Vader, but where Vader is within that dark space he's occupying. Literally, Obi-Wan is afraid of the dark with no light to turn on, no way to turn on the light, because like you said, he has not been using the force. He's so disconnected from it. He's lost the light switch. He doesn't know where that is. It's why he struggles so badly in their duel, barely able to use his own lightsaber, and he gets tossed around like a rag doll and dragged through the coals of fire, which is just insane. Vader is maniacal to enact this sort of suffering on Obi-Wan the way that he burned on Mustafar, right? And so I think it's really interesting when you think of the way that that metaphor bookends this episode up front, like teaching Leia the force, and then Obi-Wan's almost not able to figure out the force in the way that he described it by the end, and that's why he fails in his duel. And I also think there's a really beautiful connection here. We talk about Qui-Gon to Claudia Gray's master and apprentice and the way that Qui-Gon thinks of the Force, right? Because in Master and Apprentice, Qui-Gon says, it matters which side we choose, even if there will never be more light than darkness, even if there can be no more joy in the galaxy than there is pain, for every action we undertake, for every word we speak, for every life we touch, it matters. I don't turn toward the light because it means someday I'll win some sort of cosmic game. I turn toward it because it is the light. Obi-Wan is describing the Force, again, not in like a scientific technical way like he does in A New Hope. The Jedi is what gives a Force is what gives a Jedi his power. He's describing it in terms of light and dark. And it feels like he learned that from Qui-Gon, and Qui-Gon's mode of thinking has really influenced and left an imprint on Obi-Wan. And I think that's a really beautiful connection for book readers. I immediately thought of that passage as soon as he used that metaphor.
You did. And then I went, oh my God, where's that from? I know it really well, but where's it from? Because, we've consumed so much Star Wars over the years. And you're like, Master and Apprentice. And I was like, oh, Claudia. Of course.
Yeah, of course, right?
So, I mean, what a perfect quote to pair with this scene, for sure. Choose the light because it is the light. And you were saying, going to the end of this, and he can't kind of turn on the light because he's losing and because he's not using the Force in the same way that he was. But at the same time, you could reframe that and say, he chooses to ignite his lightsaber, and the way that the lightsabers are lit in this series, first of all, holy bonkers. Oh my gosh. They are just like bathing them in light. It is.
Yeah.
My audio is probably maxing out disgustingly there, but like they're so bright and so colorful. So you really get that red and blue color just like everywhere on their faces and their bodies. It's kind of amazing. So like you could see this phrase of like, how do you feel when you turn on the light? I feel safe. If you want to say like the light is the lightsaber, even though he loses that battle, he is feeling a little bit safer because he has this weapon in his hand that is bathing him in a glimmer of light. Because in that quote with Qui-Gon, even Qui-Gon says, I choose the light, even if there will be no more light in the world than there is darkness.
Mm-hmm.
Qui-Gon there is accepting that sometimes you will lose, or sometimes that it won't go in your favor. And I think in this final scene, Obi-Wan is doing the same thing. He understands where he is after 10 years. He knows he's not the same fighter, the same Jedi that he used to be. And frankly, neither is Vader. Vader, as we see, as he dresses at the beginning of this episode, or not even dresses, but like gets literally put back together, he's like amputated all four limbs. They have to robots attach the limbs to his body, and then he can start to move his fingers and toes, because otherwise he doesn't have them because they're not plugged in to his system. And then he like gets all his pieces put together. When he is walking through this, he can't run. He's lumbering, like he's barely making it by. I think somebody on Twitter said that like Vader is like a tank, and he fights like a tank because he can't do what he did 10 years ago as Anakin Skywalker on Mustafar before he was burned. And I thought that was so interesting because both of these men know each other so intimately and left each other in such horrible states, that they don't know each other anymore. And they might have had an expectation of one another when they saw them, like, or when they like knew that they were coming, but they couldn't have imagined what the other one was like anymore.
Yeah.
And so in that way, they're also both attempting to find their own fighting style these days and attempting to understand who they are as within their own roles. And I mean, I think Vader maybe has the upper hand here because he's been the all-powerful, Lord of the Sith, and has the Inquisitors under his belt, and he's kind of just like an evil badass, and he's vengeful. But like Obi-Wan hasn't tapped into the side of himself for a decade.
Yeah, it's the first time we see him use his lightsaber in the series. And initially he takes out his saber, ready to ignite it against Vader, and he runs. He just starts running, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I love when Vader's like, you cannot hide, Obi-Wan. And that's when he turns it on. And yeah, you're so right with the coloring of this episode. It really reminds me of Attack of the Clones, when Dooku slices the lights off and him and Anakin are fighting, and there's just that like couple seconds where the light is going bouncing off their faces. It kind of reminded me of that.
Yeah.
I also love the use of the original sounds of Obi-Wan's lightsaber during the A New Hope duel in this. I thought that was really clever. And seeing Obi-Wan's point of view, like as he's moving his saber around, it's a very Deborah Chow stylistic choice. She directs action so freaking well. Like throughout this episode, especially like during the transport scene when Obi-Wan really shows off his finesse with a blaster, which you would not expect. Mm-hmm. The way that the laser cuts open that stormtrooper. So much good action here. And I think it's just directed so well. But yeah, I mean, the fact that we have this confrontation between these two, and Obi-Wan's like, you know, what have you become? And Anakin says, I am what you made me. That is dark. That is, it sends chills up your spine, you know, and it makes me think of Caitlin from Skytalkers referenced this on her Twitter. It's about the Roth's novelization and how that book has the quote about, you know, this is about the damage that they've done to each other. You know, two brothers.
Oh, yeah, two brothers.
Anakin's not necessarily wrong in a way, right? I mean, Obi-Wan did kind of turn him into the person he became from a certain point of view, but also Obi-Wan doesn't bear all that responsibility because Anakin's actions are his own.
Yes.
At the same time, like Anakin existed within a system that led him to make the choices that he did in a way, right? And on the flip side, we know Obi-Wan didn't necessarily reach out to Anakin in the way that he should have, right? So Obi-Wan's made mistakes. Anakin's made mistakes. And so here they are going up to each other, carrying all those mistakes with them, facing down what they've become, like what Obi-Wan is, like where he is in his life, as well as where Vader is in his. That opening scene juxtaposes that completely, right?
100%.
Obi-Wan cut off from the Force, struggling, his hands, you get all those shots of Obi-Wan's hands, and he's kind of like continuously changing how he's holding his hands, like he's really nervous and he's really struggling. And then on the flip side, you have Vader being put together and this horrible life that he's living, right? Like tubes getting cut off of him, needles getting inserted into him. And the moment when he steps off that plate and starts walking towards the camera in the shadow, silhouetting him, that was just so good. And the music was so good. And so I think, again, that opening scene does such a good job contrasting where these two are in their life. Like they're both struggling in their own way.
Yeah, they're really both struggling, and they both feel a lot of pain, but for completely different reasons and with completely different goals in mind.
They're both damaged.
They're both so damaged. And like I kind of want to go back to the mechanics of the fight for a second as I kind of watch through these clips, but it's really interesting to see how they move and see how the action plays, because like Vader's just like walking toward him and like striking. I talked a lot about in the past how Kylo Ren fights with his entire body. He throws his entire body into a lightsaber move. It's not just the hips, it's not just the shoulders, it's literally like I'm throwing my entire chest into the way that I'm moving forward to strike you. And Vader is doing something very similar, and I really think for Vader it's because like he can't move as fast as he once did, and so he relies on like his raw power that's like enhanced by his machine parts, you know. And so that's really interesting to like observe as we're in this like super wide shot and you're just kind of watching him come after Obi-Wan chop by chop, step by step. It's really powerful, and again the lightsabers are so free bright that you could see them from a mile away, which I am genuinely loving.
I think the fight is choreographed so well. It feels very Empire Strikes Back in a way as well. You know, like when Luke rushes off to face Vader and he's just quite not prepared at all.
Yeah.
The way that Vader sort of jumps out of the shadows in a way that like he does in the hallway scene with Luke, and he's just breathing as he's like kind of hunting him down the hall and smacking the walls with a saber, right? Like same thing here, like the way that Obi-Wan smacks the smoke and it starts billowing and all you see is Vader kind of come towards the camera. Smoke completely surrounds him and you just see the red lightsaber behind the smoke. It made me think of the Bespin room when there's all that smoke in the carbon freezing chamber. It like had the same vibe for some reason. You should have killed me when you had the chance.
Brutal. Oh. Brutal. And then we get to him over the pit of flames and we see Vader's face through the flames and he goes, now you will suffer, Obi-Wan.
That's just so brutal.
Yeah, you have to, I mean, it hurts. It hurts particularly badly because we know who Anakin was as a child. And we know that like the number one thing is that there wasn't enough kindness in the galaxy. And now he's this beast, this machine man who is on a rampage because he's lost everything he's ever loved. He's lost himself. And now all he can have is power. No one will ever accept him again. No one will ever love him again. He's not himself. So it's, I don't know.
I have a thought.
I don't know. It's, go ahead. Please share your thought or else I'm going to just talk about, well, nobody's ever going to love him.
The phrase an eye for an eye makes the whole world go blind come to mind.
Mm.
And so here, in a way, it is sort of an eye to eye. I burn, you burn, right?
Yeah.
And when Obi-Wan is in that sort of hideout area for the Jedi, he reads the words on the wall from Quinlan Voss, and the words say only.
First of all, stop. Quinlan Voss
is alive.
Okay, now continue.
Oh my God, my boy, he's alive.
Or at least was alive at one point when he wrote that.
Yeah, well, Indira Varma's character says that he helps out. Helps.
Oh, helps. Present. In the present. Okay.
Yeah. So I think he's still going. So exciting as a Clone Wars fan and seeing Quinlan and Obi-Wan still maybe have a chance to link up. Maybe O'Shea Jackson Jr. is playing Quinlan. Who knows? So the phrase on the wall says, you know, only when your eyes are truly closed do you see. Like, and then Leia's like, see what? And he says, the way. And I thought that was. Oh, the way he says that and the way his eyes are lit in that shot. And the cinematography of the show, Chung Hoon Chung is doing a fucking awesome job. Deborah Chow directing that too with him. It's just like a power duo.
You can tell there's a really clear vision.
Yeah. When you think of though, like an eye for an eye makes the whole world go blind. Well, when you're blind, you can't see. And if you're not seeing, only when you don't see, that's when you find the way, when your eyes are closed. Is there like, am I maybe reaching here, right?
Can I tell you what I think it means?
What do you think it means?
I think it means Qui-Gon.
Yeah.
I think that line is specifically speaking to like him figuring out whatever he needs to figure out with Qui-Gon. Like, I think that is just like a window for him to realize what he needs to do.
Yeah. And I think too, when you think of, okay, now that they've gone eye for an eye, Obi-Wan's at the point where his eyes will be closed because he's injured. He's probably going to be resting.
Oh, yeah.
And maybe this is the point when he finally does touch base with Qui-Gon and get that guidance. He's really desperate for his master, right? And so I think as we're halfway through the show, we're going to see that light finally turn on. And when the light does turn on, Qui-Gon will be in the room talking to Obi-Wan, and they're going to go toe-to-toe again at some point. Like, Obi-Wan and Vader are going to fight one more time. And yeah. I don't know what the reason is. I don't know how Leia is going to get factored into all of this. But this is a turning point for Obi-Wan.
I would also just like to say, I am, you know, like, I have the screen on with the caption so I can catch some of these scenes again. The way, capital W, capital W.
This is the way.
The way. W. So I don't know what the capitalization of this is the way in Mandalorian stuff is.
It's capital.
It is capital.
Yep.
Interesting. That's all I have to say about that. Interesting.
It is interesting. It's like, because, it's like how the Force gets described in different ways. Like, what is the way,
like,
for a Mandalorian versus the way for a Jedi?
The tide.
Yeah.
The Force. Okay, just saying. It's just interesting.
Fascinating.
I think it's just
fascinating.
Interesting. I think it's interesting.
I want to talk about that hideout for a second, and the fact that Quinlan Voss is alive.
Yeah.
And it really got me thinking that the show could have some really good potential connections to Jedi Fallen Order. Mm-hmm. And I know this is another reach, and I'll probably be proven wrong very soon. But we know that part of Cal Kestis's journey and Seer's journey is to rescue any Jedi that are still out there. We know Jedi Survivor takes place 5 years after Fallen Order, which would be 10 years after episode 3. And we know the show takes place 10 years after episode 3. One could be led to believe, potentially, that maybe Cal and Seer are also involved in this sort of underground system where they are rescuing Jedi, sending them to Jabin to get new identities. Are we going to see Quinlan Vos in Jedi Survivor? Are we going to see Cal Kestis on Jabin with Quinlan Vos? And like when they go there to that planet, are they going to both appear in the show? I don't know. It's pure speculation. I think at the very least, Quinlan could show up in the series, and that would be a really interesting thing for Obi-Wan to see another Jedi who is still alive. I mean, he saw Betty Safdie's character already, but like somebody that he's actually had a personal connection with and knows and fought with in the Clone Wars. I think that could be a really unique conversation to really give him hope in a new way from the mind of a Jedi. I also recognize that when Reva touches the Jedi symbol on the wall, there's a moment where she recognizes it. And she also not only recognizes that symbol, but she recognizes the hallway. And part of me wonders, as a youngling, did she get moved throughout the system? Is she getting those memories resurfaced? And did she maybe get caught up in one of these systems to the point where Vader or his Inquisitorius found her and the group she was with, but Vader handpicked her out to be the next Inquisitor, sort of like he handpicked Starkiller as a child.
Yeah, but also like you think back to, you were just mentioning Jedi Fallen Order. We were watching the cutscene yesterday where Trilla, Seer, and Youngling are all together, and Seer's like, I'm going to go ahead. You know, you come right after me. And then we wake up and Seer is being tortured by the Imperials. And then the next scene, we are as Trilla putting on the Inquisitor helmet. And then they, you know, Seer kind of breaks out. Trilla and Seer got captured in a tunnel, you know, like,
was it the same sort of system?
Like it's all coming together.
Is this where Vader finds his best Inquisitors? He scopes out these areas, you know, he scopes out these areas where younglings are being moved, Jedi are being moved. He kills those who are weak and don't offer anything to him. And then he takes the ones that are strong and turns them into an Inquisitor. Because we know Inquisitors are Jedi, former Jedi. So it's really dark to think about, but I think there is more to Reva's story. And I think 100%. Reva's story does connect to some of the origins of Trilla in a way.
Yeah.
And I would not be surprised if we get some sort of flashback, because we know Trilla has a deeper connection with Vader than the other Inquisitors. We see that when she talks to him, when they're kind of surprised that she got to talk to him directly. And so I think Vader has a certain affinity for her in a way. So I wouldn't be surprised if that's why, if he literally hand chose her to be in a position of power at some point.
That, or he kind of like sees some of her same gusto, you know, determination for her job, and like sees himself in that for power, kind of. I don't know. I think it's really interesting, and it's crazy to think we only have 3 more episodes. Like, how can we learn everything in 3 more episodes? Like, more Kenobi, more little Leia, please. Yeah, I don't know. I'll be really, really curious to see like where we go.
Noteworthy too, the one of the walls, somebody translated the Orabesh and it said for light and life. So for all you High Republic fans.
It said for life and light. They had flipped it. But you know, they got it. I'm close enough. I'm hoping that other people will translate whatever else they can see, because I think it would be fun to figure out, because you can tell like the set designers and folks are probably having a pretty good time figuring that all out. So yeah, let's talk about since we're kind of at the Jedi hideout here, we can go in one of two directions. And the one of them is like Vader in the village. And the other one is Tala in the loader droid. Where do you want to go?
Yeah, let's, I think for Vader in the village, we can talk about that.
All right.
For a second, because
yeah,
I want to talk about, it's Tala, right?
I believe so.
Yeah. Tala, I think, ties really well into Leia's journey throughout this episode as well. So let's get Vader out of the way first. I want to mention the shot of the shadow on the wall and the way that they direct the scene, and where we're only seeing his feet and his cape and his hand next to his saber until yeah. we actually get the full reveal. It's little stuff like that that is just so stylistic and so good, and such a brilliant way to, like, we know it's Vader, right? To play it as if the audience doesn't know who it is and still build up that tension of like, oh my God, I can't wait to see like Vader's face. You know, it's a job well done on a directing part.
Yeah. Not only that, but like the first action we see for him, once we see his whole body, is for him to pull a man out of their window with the force. Like
it inspires fear.
And then somebody like runs out, like a child runs out, and then he snaps their neck.
Yeah.
Like, it's so brutal. I mean, I don't know how you could be a fan and be like, eh, this Vader, not so scary. He's scary.
I was terrified. I watched this at 3 a.m. And I think that was the best time to watch it, because I was actually scared to go to bed. I was like, I'm going to have Vader in my dreams. Like, this is terrifying. Yeah, then
he's like dragging somebody along. He's like
yeah.
throwing people up. Like, he is really just doing awful, awful things to these townspeople. And again, we know he has to make it out. We know he gets to the hallway scene. We know he becomes the Vader in the original trilogy. But like, woo, he is, somehow he gets scarier. The more that Disney and Lucasfilm use him, the scarier he gets, which is a little bonkers in my opinion. Also, I just have to mention while we're here, the fifth brother's voice.
So good.
It's so spooky. Sun He's Kang. So scary.
What a guy. You're doing a great job, buddy.
He's like, I mean, also we see the Fortress Inquisitorius.
Yeah. Reva's power in this walk episode. Montage through the hallway with the Natalie Holt score just on full blast. Very yeah. powerful. I loved that scene. That was so good. And I know some people have cool. critiqued not using like classic themes, like the Imperial March theme and yada, yada, yada. I get that. But I also think like overusing those motifs is sometimes to a detriment. And I think it's good to establish new themes and new tones and new motifs and allow these composers, especially like a new composer, the first woman composer, to try something new and try something that speaks to them while also paying respect to what's come before. And there are still subtle motifs sprinkled throughout. You might not notice them unless you're listening very closely, but they're in there. You know, there are yeah. glimpses of the Imperial March in there. It's just a different vibe.
Sure.
I do want to ask you, do you think Vader knew Obi-Wan was there watching him through the village? Because there is a moment where Vader kind of turns in that direction and we get that shot where it's just the dark figure and you can't see the face. It's so scary. It's so terrifying. But to me, I think Vader starts doing all those things to those civilians because he knows, okay, Obi-Wan's in that general direction. He sees me right now. I'm going to show him what he turned me into.
Yeah.
And that his actions not only affected me, but his actions are now affecting all of these people, and these people's lives are on his hands. These people's blood are on his hands. And that's obviously a skewed way of thinking, but it's the way that Vader thinks.
Yeah.
And I think that's his justification in that moment for doing what he does. Would you agree with that? That's how I read that scene. I think he knows he's being watched by Obi-Wan.
I feel like he's got to.
Yeah.
I feel like he's got to, because Obi-Wan knows he's there. And if Obi-Wan is aware that, you know, Vader is there, I think it's got to be the other way around too. Because, yeah. I mean, you were my brother, Anakin. I loved you. They were so, without this in the way that you would think, but they were so intimate with one another. You know, like they knew each other for, you know, years upon years of their lives. They grew up together in a way, and they had a very intimate relationship, you know, as a master and apprentice. And so I think he must know. I don't think there's any way that Vader wouldn't know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
this episode is just so damn good. Yeah. I honestly, every week, I say every week as if it's only been 2 weeks.
Not even. Literally not even. It's been like 6 days.
Yeah. I just can't believe the quality that we're getting in the show. And I also do want to mention too, I know we've talked a lot about the Inquisitors. It is important to note like all of the racist remarks that are being flung towards Moses Ingram and like all the hatred that she's been receiving over the past couple of days. It's terrible. If you're a part of that, you're not a real fan. I think it was real inspirational to see like Ewan come to Moses's defense and post that video. I think that was a huge deal. I was really happy to see like Star Wars use its platform, you know, where it might have failed before for some of the sequel trilogy cast. I'm really happy that they came to the support of Moses and called out racism for what it is and what's happening. And, you know, you could chalk up all day and say, oh, I'm hating the character, not the actress. No, you are hating the actress when you hate the character, because actors put themselves into their performances. And you can't really separate the two. Not liking a character is not an excuse to be an asshole or to be a racist. So stop that.
Yeah, we're probably preaching to the choir here, but just like also adding, you don't have to comment. Like people who are saying, well, I don't hate her because of her race. I hate her because it's terrible writing. I literally was like looking at a photo of a fan with Kelly Marie Tran, who this fan was in a Rose cosplay, and they were like, well, Kelly Marie should have never gotten any of the abuse that like she got. It was her writing. It was the character that was terrible. And that's the writing. So it's like on a photo of Kelly and a fan who was dressed as Rose. Don't be that guy ever.
Just all of our love to Moses and what she's been going through. So she's love Reva.
She's freaking amazing in this show. Yeah. And I hope that she knows how good she is in this show, despite all of the ugly noise.
Yeah, I'm just happy she's getting the support that she definitely needs. And I love how she posted on her Instagram story, you know, the support is louder than the hate, or I forget what she said exactly, but she's definitely seeing the kindness, at least from the people that matter more. So just thought it was important to address.
And I will say, like, I really do appreciate the brand coming to her defense swiftly and powerfully. I do think it is the brand's responsibility to stand up for their cast and creative when like racist attacks like this happen. I don't think any of their actors or creatives should have to suffer abuse when they sign on to do this.
Yeah,
it's a job, you know. So anyway, that's my other part of that.
Yeah, and I hope that support continues.
Exactly.
I want them to call it out whenever it happens, not selectively. You know, so
yeah,
as we start to wrap up here, I do want to talk about Leia and the way that she takes charge in this episode and shows us the leader and the fighter that she will become later on in her life. And I think that's also tied directly to when she meets Tala. The whole sequence with the transport and like her and Obi-Wan kind of driving through and having these conversations. I love when she says, oh, you know, I love the Empire, but the way in which too, like Obi-Wan's like, you know, don't talk. And she's like, okay. And then she just talks regardless. And she's like, enough walking, father, we're going to go on this transport. You know, it was total like into the garbage chute flyboy energy. And I'm like, I totally see how this small child becomes Princess Leia later on in the original trilogy. Like you see those direct correlations there. But I think it's also heartbreaking when Obi-Wan tells the story of her mother and it's like, you know, sometimes when I look at her face I see her mother, and how Leia, again, using her sort of like force sensitive abilities that are around like empathy and understanding and intuition, she knows Obi-Wan is holding back on his memories of Padme, and you know, she asks if he's her father and he says I wish, right? And that really fed the Obi-Dala shippers as well. But I think that speaks a lot to Obi-Wan's character and that he wishes that, you know, he could have raised her in a world that was right and to give her the support that she needed. Not that Brea and Bail aren't, but it's just a powerful statement.
Again, because like Obi-Wan is lost to literally everyone.
Yeah.
All he wants to do is like be able to care for someone.
Yeah.
I think.
And so I think it's really powerful when we get to Indira Varma's character, Tala, and she sees so much of what she's going to become, right? Like Tala is this pretender. She is wearing an imperial disguise. She wears her blaster on her one hip to give her a quicker draw. And Leia's like, is it scary to pretend? And this is a little Leia.
Oh my gosh.
Who's going to grow up and pretend so much. She's going to pretend to be a senator that's not leading a rebellion. You know, I'm on a diplomatic mission to Alderaan, right? She's going to wear the Boosh outfit to rescue Han Solo from Jabba's palace. She's going to do a lot of pretending. And she knows that it's okay because she's helping people. And that's what Tala says. It's okay. I know it's unsafe, but it's worth it because I help people. And that's also something I think Padme lived by as well.
Yeah, I think it's really interesting when she does have that moment with Tala. Is it scary to pretend? Because we know who she becomes, and we know that even in her younger, her later teen years, but younger years broadly, she has to do a lot of pretending as a princess, and you know, as her family is around her as they build the rebellion. It's kind of incredible to watch these parallels happen and to watch the lessons that she's actively learning from them. I will say that, like, that moment at the beginning when they're talking about where the Force works, murdered me emotionally. And this other moment that you just mentioned, like when she says, oh, you know, when I look at her, I see her mother, you know, who's no longer with us.
Three for three with Padme references. Let's do it.
It's brutal. It's so good. Like, it's exactly what I want in the Star Wars, but like, it hurts.
Mm-hmm.
It hurts. And
we asked for it.
we did ask for it, but it hurts. It makes me feel sad. But it also speaks to the way that even by just being Padme's biological daughter, Padme has also raised her and is her parent despite not being there. Like, Padme's influence, Padme's DNA is like, it's like all over this kid, you know, like the reason why she becomes as smart and as strong and as powerful and as Padme is because she is from Padme too. Mm-hmm. And I like she has four parents and not two, you know, and like, that's beautiful. I don't know.
Yeah. And Bail learned from Padme too by working so closely with her, right? So I'm sure he picked up some of her characteristics in a way of like, wow, this is somebody who's a role model and a leader who I want to embody now that she's gone. You know, I want to carry on Padme's legacy and her work.
Yeah, for sure.
But I know you loved Tala and Ned B, the loader droid. You want to talk about them for a minute here?
Yes, I have one comment before we move on. And yeah. Obi-Wan saying, I think I had a brother. Ouch, ouch, ouch,
oh my gosh.
Ouch, ouch. Okay. And his now mother's shawl.
Oh God, I'm going to cry.
It hurts. It hurts.
It really hurts.
There's now a Kenobi out there. And the, right. Well, because like, he has a full name, Obi-Wan Kenobi. That's a first and a last name. Like, how do as a Jedi, like Reeth Sylas, like, how do you not like go out and seek out your family? I don't understand. Like, how do you not go out and seek out your life before your life as a Jedi? I don't understand, especially as like teen Jedi struggle a lot. But anyway, Tala and the loader droid. Did you think that when Tala showed up, or like when she showed up in the trailer, that she was going to be a spy, a rebel? Because I didn't.
All.
I had no idea.
Nope. I love
and
it.
And I was like, wait, I love her. You know, like, she's so cool and she's so secretive. And I was absolutely obsessed with her character. And I think she was like a beautiful role model to Leia, and just like a really strong willed character, which I love to see.
It's such a formative moment for Leia to meet her. And I love Leia meeting other women who are like embodying the traits that she's going to have later in her life.
Yeah.
It's so important. And I hope that she doesn't get offed in the next episode. My one hope is that Tala doesn't die. So we'll see. But I love her as a character, and I hope we get more with her helping the cause throughout the series. That would be pretty cool.
Yeah, I think I would love to see her back. I would love to see more of her. Like, I think she's just a really interesting character. She's got stories to tell, you know, she's really got stories to tell. But the loader droid is really interesting as well, because like, Leia introduces the loader droid to Lola.
So cute.
And then what's so fascinating is that then Tala says he can't respond. The loader droids aren't capable, like aren't allowed communication. And I was like, oh my God, droid rights. Yeah. because it's clear that like this droid is independently minded, has things to say, has things to be, has chosen a path for himself, but like can't express to other people, which is such a shame. It's so fascinating to see. I don't think we've seen a droid quite like this.
Nope. Yeah. So. It's really interesting. Leia has just been, has meant so much to me watching the show, and
yeah,
she really is smart. And to kind of wrap up, Obi-Wan saying, you know, yeah, she will be a fighter someday. I believe it. You know, she's somebody to look out for. And,
for sure.
I'm also glad that we didn't ditch Leia in this episode as a tied up story. I'm pretty confident that she's going to be the whole series up to the very end. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, that would be cool. That'd be cool.
Yeah.
But did you have any final thoughts on part three of Obi-Wan Kenobi?
I can't believe we have to wait a full week for the next episode. I feel like this one ended on such a cliffhanger that I was like ready to go for the next one. And it was like, no siree.
Deborah Chow. Dang it. Making us wait. Just drop it all at once, please.
For real. Ugh. For real.
I'm glad we get
two at a time.
Yeah. I'm glad we get to savor it each week, and I'm so excited for the story ahead. So we'll see what happens on part four. And I think it's going to be a definite turning point for the series. So buckle in, folks. It's going to be a wild ride.
I am excited and terrified.
Well, until the next episode, if you want to hear more of our thoughts on Obi-Wan Kenobi, you can find Sarah and I on Twitter, Letterboxd, and Goodreads. And you can find the podcast on Twitter and Instagram. Make sure if you're listening to the show to subscribe and get all of our episodes of the Kenobi keynote dropping right into your podcast feed. And also leave us a 5-star written review if you could. It takes a couple extra seconds and means the world to us and helps other people find the show on the Apple Podcasts, Spotify, all those podcast platforms to have more friends of the Force join us.
We also have a Patreon where tiers start at just $1, and we're so grateful for our patrons: Amy, Anna, Brian, Carol, Cheryl, Clay, Danny, Davis, Deborah, Dylan, Donnie, Elegy, Huang, Jen, Knights of Ren, Levi, Leanne, Lucy, Luke, Lindsay, Randy, Rob, Saber Bouquet, Skytalkers, Travis, and T.
So thank you all again for your support. Thank you for listening to this episode. And until next time, may the Force be with you always.
Happy Pride. Bye.